Thanks. So I'm David Hartley, recently retired from the Maine Rural Health Research Center. So I'm not a wise old professor anymore. I'm just a guy who's Medicare eligible. Not only that, but when I retired, I did something really drastic, which is I retired to one of the two frontier counties east of the Mississippi. Piscataquis is the name of it. And I thought about that this morning when I was trying to remember how to pronounce Chupatulas, which is the name of one of the streets near my hotel. They have something in common, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I should also mention that as a former director of a rural health research center, the stuff I'll be talking about in terms of the studies, the analysis I've done or my friends have done, has all been funded by HRSA. So thanks to them. And I have my disclosure slide here. You've probably seen one or two of these in the last few days saying I don't have anything to disclose. In fact, I have less than anything to disclose now that I'm retired. So here's what we're going to try to do in the next 15 minutes, what I'm going to try to do. I've got some what I call prevalence data, but a lot of it is urban-rural comparisons, things to do with mental health and substance abuse. I'm going to talk a little bit about the infrastructure that's out there to address those issues, particularly the rural infrastructure. And then I want to go over a few of what I consider to be the big ones, the big issues that are you may have been reading about recently or heard about, including prescription drug abuse, including suicide, especially suicide among veterans and recently deployed soldiers, and also stigma, which is a perennial issue that has always been with us in terms of mental health, people unwilling to seek mental health care, and has also been a problem in the military. And then finally, I'm going to go over a few what I consider to be promising solutions, some new programs that you should know about. So, disparities by the numbers. First of all, I would like to say that anxiety and depression, which are the two highest prevalence mental health disorders that we're dealing with, there really is not, at least based on SAMHSA's data briefs that they put out every few years, no big difference between urban and rural. Bear in mind here that we're talking about all rural and all urban. We're not looking at any nuanced analysis or intra-urban, intra-rural analysis. The rest of these data are from my own research or that of the Rural Health Research Center where I've been working. So we did a study where we looked at adult binge drinking and teen binge drinking and found that rural rates were higher, significantly higher. We did another study where we looked at children, and particularly children who were in need of mental health services. They have a higher rate of being diagnosed with ADHD, and they have a higher rate of being prescribed basically psychotropic medications, especially for ADHD. So there's something going on there. It may be actually higher prevalence rates, or it may be higher diagnostic rates, or it may have something to do with the rural school systems. But in any case, there's an urban-rural difference. And then the biggest discrepancy or disparity that you're going to see today is this one for suicide rates. I report the male suicide rate because it's more dramatic, but there's a female difference as well, significant difference. These are not percentages, these are rates per 100,000. We also did some very recent analysis, actually I did it in preparation for this session, using medical expenditure panel survey data. And what we found here, we just looked at how people answered questions about their perceived mental health, and also how they answered a series of questions about specific mental health issues, which are combined into the Kessler score. And what we found here is that there's a monotonic relationship. Things get worse as you get more rural. So that's the basic story. This is more recent and more nuanced than the data that I showed you on the previous slides. And here's what it looks like in terms of geographic variations. This one is teen binge drinking. I just have a couple of slides here to illustrate the geographic disparities. These numbers were put, these geographic units are not counties and they're not states. They're clusters of counties. This was put together by SAMHSA to show some regional variations. And, you know, you look at particular areas that are surprises, very high rates of binge drinking in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, the Youpers, and along the Red River Valley in North Dakota and so on. And interestingly, we're used to seeing Mississippi, Alabama, and so forth having the worst indicators in healthcare, Not when it comes to binge drinking. They tend to be not drinkers down there. In any case, this shows why a general urban-rural comparison doesn't get you very far. And this one is for pain relievers, non-medical use of pain relievers, another geographic disparity kind of issue, but a very different map, very different rates. And now you see a whole lot of this going on in Indian country, among other places, but it's a very different pattern. So it depends on where you are, and it depends on which substance abuse problem you're looking at. One of the interesting things about pain relievers or non-medical use pain relievers is that a lot of states have cracked down on the pill mills, the doctors who are prescribing a little bit too freely, and that's made it harder to get your hands on oxycodone and some of those things. And so a lot of folks have switched to heroin, and as a result, you're seeing stories in the news now about increasing heroin overdose deaths. What one study that I think might be about time to happen is to look at people coming into the emergency rooms in rural hospitals suffering from heroin overdoses. So, a little bit on the behavioral health infrastructure. Basically, there isn't much. Rural areas have been underserved for the entire time, 23 years that I've been studying rural mental health. And in fact, as you can see from some of these numbers, not only are they underserved, but the supply of psychiatrists is declining. Psychiatrists are not able to take new patients, and they're not able to see even existing patients on a short notice. And the last bullet on here that I want to say just a few more words about, where there is no infrastructure, other folks step up sometimes to pick up the slack. So over a period of about 10 years, the Maine Rural Health Research Center did a series of studies trying to understand what we refer to as the rural mental health safety net. We looked at people being treated by their primary care providers for mental health issues. Then we looked at community mental health centers. Then we looked at people presenting in rural emergency rooms. And finally, we looked at rural jails. And all of these papers are available as briefs or as publications. I'm not going to go into the details. I think the takeaway from that particular series is simply that there's lots of different ways that people try to make do when they don't have a mental health infrastructure. This is a nice map prepared by Rural Assistance Center, North Dakota, that shows essentially that what I just said, that there's not much in the way of an infrastructure. Now, I want to get to some of those specific issues. I just talked a little bit about the non-medical use of prescription drugs. This one is about suicide. So this is suicide in general, 40,000 deaths each year. Some of you may have seen a fairly lengthy series run by USA Today, recently, on suicide. I got this number from them. How often do I get to quote USA Today when I'm doing a presentation? Also, recently, a recent study showed the 10 leading causes of death in the United States. All of them are declining, which is really great, except for suicide, which is going up. A couple of other factors here. It's hard to identify people who are at risk for suicide because so many of them don't have prior suicide attempts and for a variety of other reasons. And for the most part, they aren't engaged with the mental health system. They haven't seen a mental health practitioner. So suicide prevention is a major challenge. It's an even greater challenge in rural areas. And I'll get to a little bit of detail on that when I talk about some of the promising new programs. On the veterans side, I'm going to skip some of this because I want to talk about some recent things that since I prepared this slide, have come to my attention. There's been a series of studies done by the Army using a couple of different data sets, survey and what might be called a big data approach, trying to figure out how we can identify people who are soldiers who are at risk for suicide. And it's a real issue because, as one of these bullets points out, a disproportionate number of our veterans are from rural states, or are from rural areas, I should say. So the military got on this quite a few years ago. In 1996, the Air Force came up with a prevention plan that was actually proven quite effective. It involved a lot of different levels. It involved leadership engagement. It involved education, social support, individual coping skills, cultural change. One of the issues that they were definitely struggling with was how to overcome stigma within the military, where people think that if they admit they have any kind of a problem, it's going to end their military career. And they've had some success in dealing with that. But more recently, they've done big data analyses. When I say big data, when you know a whole lot of things about millions of soldiers, you can do some kinds of analysis that we can't do with all populations to see which characteristics tend to predict suicide attempt or successful suicides. And they've done this with people who were actually hospitalized for mental health issues. But other studies within the military have also done it for soldiers who were not hospitalized. And it allowed, using predictive analytics with huge data, they are able to find which factors might be used to identify people who are at risk. One of the things that they came up with, and this is a fairly recent publication, and I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about it, is that continuity of care is one of the predictive factors. And I should also mention that we cannot replicate what the military has done with the general population because we don't have that kind of a rich data set. But we're getting there because of health information exchanges and so forth. So there may be promise to do something about that. So three programs I want to talk about briefly. One of them is telemental health, which we published a brief about just a year ago. A little bit about Rural Veterans Health Access Program, which is a fairly new program funded by HRSA, and also something called Rural Mental Health First Aid. So on telemental health, this was in a brief, as I said, that we recently published, and we screened all the public health, all the telemental health programs we could find in the country that were serving rural areas, and then we did qualitative interviews with a number of them to find out sort of how they did it, what their challenges were, and so forth. One of the things we found is that telemental health is not a virtual mental health center. It can't do everything that a mental health center can do. It can do, so the scope of services is somewhat limited. They still face provider recruitment and retention issues. In particular, some of the smaller clinics are contracting with an individual psychiatrist to give them telemental services. That psychiatrist says, you know, my caseload just went up here in my face-to-face, so I'm going to have to not see your people for a while, and there isn't anybody else to go to. So the fact that there aren't a lot of psychiatrists out there is a problem, even when you're trying to use telemental health as your intervention. And so that really is the third bullet there. It just really, it doesn't solve chronic shortages, the shortages, as I mentioned, that I've been observing for the last 20-some years. So those bullets you'll find in the sidebar on our brief addressing telemental health. Okay, another one, this is a new one that actually kind of came along after I retired, so I at least came onto my radar screen, so I had to go back and do a little backfilling to fill you in on what I know about it, but the Maine Rural Health Research Center has gotten a contract to evaluate this program. So it's funded by HRSA, and it's targeted to OEF-OIF veterans, that's Iraq and Afghanistan, for those of you who aren't in that club. And grantees are in Alaska, Maine, and Montana. Its purpose is to improve the access and quality of mental health services for veterans. And one of the chronic problems we've had in the VA is that people, rural veterans who are in remote areas, can't get to a VA provider. So the whole point of this thing is to coordinate care between non-VA providers, private providers in rural areas, and VA. One of the ways to do that is through creating networks of providers. Another way is through telehealth, but probably the most challenging is trying to get the two electronic health systems to talk to each other so we can effectively have continuity of care. But this is what they're promising to do, they're trying to do with this. And this program has been going on for just about a year, and we are in the process of evaluating to see how successful they've been. Stay tuned, we'll let you know. Now, Rural Mental Health First Aid is another program that we are evaluating, and it's been around for a while. This is a huge national effort. It's coordinated by the National Council for Behavioral Health. Its purpose is to provide basic knowledge through a training program to classrooms of people from communities all over the country. What we're training them to do is to identify people who are under stress, in distress, reduce the acute distress, and then hand them off to a mental health professional. We're not training them to treat people. One of its purposes is to combat stigma, because those people who get trained will become more comfortable with the idea that mental health is just something you can deal with. So far, 280,000 individuals have been trained through this program by 5,900 instructors. About 20% of that those trainings have been in rural areas. There is a rural module that's different from the regular module that has rural scenarios and so forth, so that it's more appropriate for rural folks. So you have a rural trainer, a rural curriculum, and a rural audience when you do these trainings. And the results have been somewhat mixed from what we've found so far. I've got a few quotes from the evaluation here. There's still a lot of stigma. People come to the back door. They don't want to be seen. This is the old, what we used to call the pickup truck phenomenon. We don't want to see my pickup truck parked in front of the mental health center kind of thing. But for some lay folks, they need more practice asking, are you thinking about killing yourself? And they get that through this training. And then trying to figure out what to do when you get an answer to that is the next challenge. So they learn to know what they're looking for, but the problem we're seeing, and is being reported to us from some of the rural trainers and training sites, is, yeah, but there's nobody to hand the person off to. I've identified a problem here. What am I supposed to do, take him home with me? There's no mental health provider here. If we don't have any services here, what good is MHFA? So the unhappy thing about that, now that's my bottom point here. So the handoff from the layperson to the professional isn't effective if there's no infrastructure. We have observed reduced stigma among the participants so far. But there isn't a strategy to translate that reduction of stigma over to the population in general. So that's a shortcoming as far as the long-term goals. There's also a goal to stimulate discussion about the infrastructure in rural communities by having these trainings. That's happened to some extent, but there's no needs assessment guide. So once again, what you're supposed to do about it after you've had that discussion is a weakness so far. This will be in our final report. But the biggest challenge that we've seen, And it could be a serious one, is that at least in rural areas, mental health first aid seems to be over-promising. A lot of folks say, this is the solution. You know, we finally got it, a way to deliver mental health services in rural areas. But it's not. It's a way to identify people who are in distress, but it's not a way to get them treated. So we stuck back with the same issue that we've always had, no infrastructure. And I think I'm done.